everyone. Welcome to the show.
Blog Talk Radio.
And hello to everyone out there. Welcome to No Rules, Just Mics, another great edition coming at you here. For those just joining us for the first time ever, No Rules, Just Mics is the No Rules radio show here on Uncensored Radio, bringing you the latest and sometimes controversial topics that you want to know. We are your No Rules host tonight. Topher will be here shortly. I am Christian, and we are happy to be bringing you another edition of the show. Lots to talk about tonight. We want to recap. You know, what we did last week, had a fantastic show, got great feedback, a lot of people, we got a lot more listeners than we intended on, which was fantastic. We got some awesome details to give you about that. Also, we're going to continue our trend from last week, where we take a little bit of a turn and do more Charleston-related things. We had great success with it last week as we try to go on a more local level. The Charleston, South Carolina, at least for part of the show. And then we'll continue on with more national conversation, of course, about TV, movies, pop culture, politics sometimes. All depends on what's going on any given week. And, of course, we'll have our kind of what-if scenarios, our social questions. You know, what do you do in these types of situations, A or B, whatever it may be. We will get into that as well. And we have all sorts of different games and things that we play sometimes. Topher, welcome.
Sorry about that, everybody. I was actually on the phone with my father. I really do apologize.
No problem. I was just holding it down, letting everybody know, you know, what we're going to be doing on this show. And, you know, we'll wrap it up here. Like I said, we sometimes have games and things that we get to. We got plenty of topics and conversations, though. But we'll start it out by saying, welcome to the show, Topher. How you been?
I am good. I don't know if you did the intro, but we are your No Rules radio show, giving you the latest and sometimes controversial topics that you want to know. Christian, I do apologize. As you know, I don't really speak to my father a whole lot, but, you know, when he calls. So I felt it was appropriate for me to take the call. I didn't realize it was going to be that long, so my apologies to my entire audience and, of course, to my humble host, Christian. Let's start off with the weekend roundup. How was your weekend?
Weekend was fantastic. The first quick thing, my work had a celebration, happy hour type deal where we do a review every year. The whole institution I work for does a review. Our department did fantastic for the second year in a row. I've only been there for these last two reviews. And to celebrate, the bosses brought us out to a happy hour at a place called Salty Mike's, which is right on the water here in Charleston, downtown, almost, you know, before you're getting down towards Broad Street, for those who are familiar with it, you know, right by the Charleston Harbor Resort Marina and such. We had fun doing that. Had a couple of drinks with coworkers and boss and such. Not a late night, but, you know, it was nice to hang out with everybody outside of work because I have a lot of cool people I work with. That I don't normally get to see that way. So that was fun. Next night was a little crazy. First, I went out for coffee on Saturday at the Orange Spot, our fantastic guest from last week, who we will be talking about here momentarily. And while I was there, Topher, you found out I was there and said, hey, you and Matt and your wonderful dog, Willow, we're going to be swinging by the neighborhood. So we met up for some coffee. We all enjoyed the various drinks we got. And then we decided to grab a couple of drinks of the adult beverage variety at nearby Vegas Park. And had a fantastic time talking about the show, watching Willow get into flowers and dirt and get a dog treat, and just having a good guy's night, just hanging out for a little bit. I'll let you talk about that some more. I don't want to, you know, steal too much of your thunder. But after that, after a quick break at home, I went to a house party of a friend. A lot of my girlfriend's coworkers stopped by, as well as some other friends that we've met recently. A good amount of people. People were playing cornhole and beer pong and just just sitting around a table talking. Became quite the shit show, which is okay. Luckily, there wasn't really too much drama, just a little bit before the girlfriend and I were leaving, so we kind of missed out on any potential drama-ness. And we went home pretty late, but not too late, where we were getting into all that business. So it was a good weekend. I actually got to go out two nights in a row, which is rare, unfortunately, these days, and had a good time with a large group of different friends doing different things. So it was definitely good. How was your weekend?
It was actually a very, very good weekend. It was kind of laid back until I found out, and I want to preface this by saying Charleston and all of my listeners, or all of our listeners who tuned in last week for the Orange Spot interview, thank you guys so much. From the bottom of my heart, it was to date the best and the highest rated show in the No Rules history, and all my rule breakers. Thank you guys so much for listening and tuning in, and thank you guys for accepting the change that we're doing. Christian and I are from Charleston. We love Charleston probably more than any other city, and in order for us to give back to a city that's given us so much, I think this is probably the best avenue that we have. So, you know, listening to Laura and Jamie.
With Julie.
Last week. Yeah, Julie. Dear the Lord. I've had a couple of drinks, so I'm very sorry. Laura and Julie, they came on the air, and, you know, their story was so inspirational. I'm so glad that everybody really kind of felt that, because it showed in the ratings, it showed in the listeners, and, you know, that kind of warms my heart, just knowing that you guys are really tuning in. So, Charleston and all of our worldwide listeners, thank you so much. I couldn't help but, you know, go to the Orange Spot and, you know, thank the girl personally. And, you know, I come to find out, Christian, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but apparently Laura's mother-in-law loves somebody on the show, and I'm wondering who it is.
Well, it's a little fuzzy memory. When I went into the coffee shop before Topher got there, they were ecstatic about the show. They said, thank you so much for having us on. They told us about how many of their friends listened to the show, which is another reason why it was so highly rated as far as listens that we had. A lot of their friends and family and people in Charleston gave it a listen to hear their girls talk. But in describing how excited they were, how great it was, and how their business actually had picked up the next day, and, you know, who knows if that had something to do with us, but Laura said she thought it did, and, you know, that was humbling, and I appreciated it. But in that, she goes, oh, and everybody loves you guys. My mother-in-law said that she said she loved you both. She's like, I just love that Christian and Topher, but I especially love that Topher. So I went from extreme joy of like, oh, we help these girls, you know, and it's just making the business bigger and better, and their dream is further realized, and I had a small part in that, and Topher had a small part in that. And we had this good, like, kismet thing going, and then all of a sudden I got to hear the mother-in-law prefers Topher. But despite that, we still appreciate her listening, of course, and hopefully we'll have some repeat listens from that crew. But that you were quite happy to hear that little tidbit of information this weekend when we met them up at the Orange
Spot. It warmed my soul and tickled my toes. I tell you what, it was amazing. it was so much fun.
Know.
And then you know, they're such great girls that work there. It's just the two of them. So, you know, you Charleston listeners, if you guys are in the Park Circle area, it's right on Chateau Street. When you first come to Chateau from Montague, it's on your right. It has beautiful orange awnings, you know, little umbrellas where people can sit outside. They're planning on doing like a dog park in the back at some point. But go in and, you know, tell the girls just how much you love them. You have to try their Cheyenne. Their Cheyenne is absolutely delicious. It's this tea with just these amazing herbs and spices. It's freaking delicious. It's so good. I can't even describe it. I really can't describe it. But Matthew he was like, I just need something cold and decaffeinated. And they made him this really special kind of, I'm going to call it red tea, but that's absolutely wrong. And Laura and Julie, if you two are listening, you guys can absolutely call in and help me with this tea that you guys made, Matthew. And I don't remember what it was, but it was absolutely delicious. And, you know, they really do cater to their audience, if you will. I think they're just brilliant. I will absolutely support them fold on fold. So if you guys are in the Charleston area, go see the girls. They're absolutely amazing.
So I was just going to say real quick before we jump off of our spot, Chelsea and I actually swung by there today. We were out and about doing stuff, and we got stuck in traffic right around their exit, and Chelsea was like, yeah, I'm not having this. Let's just go to the orange spot for a little bit. I was like, okay. She swung by. Patch Whiskey, who is a local artist. I don't know his real name. That's what he goes by, though, is Patch Whiskey. He does a lot of different graffiti-type art, especially in Park Circle. He actually has a building right across the street from them. I think he shares it with Johnny Sweet Tea, who is a chocolate maker. But in any event, they had him do their logo on the side of their building today with, like, his spray paint. And they put it on the corner, so it's, like, on the front a little bit and on the side a little bit. It looks really good. It's not as, like, abstract and crazy as some of his other art is. You know, it's pretty straightforward for their business, which makes sense. And eventually they're going to have him come back, and on the inside they're going to make the other – it's a cup, basically. There's a lot more to it, but just for the sake of talking about on the radio. The back end inside the building, they're going to make it so it looks like the cup is going through the building, so you kind of get the three-dimensional look as you are walking in the building, and then you come in and see the other side. So it's going to look really cool. And they've got some other menu items that Julie was excited to tell us about today. I'm going to be doing some, like, very light lunch kind of stuff, like a veggie wrap. And they had lemonade for the first time this week, fresh green lemonade with basil. And they're just always doing something new. So they're excited about it, and we were happy to stop in and see them again today.
That's fantastic. I'm so proud of those girls. They're such dolls. They're so sweet. And, you know, they're going to be really upset. You don't remember the pen joke? Which really wasn't a joke, hysterical. I'll have to let them tell it. So the next time that they're on there, I'm going to have to make her, I think it was Laura, divulge the pen joke, which was, it was awkward when it actually happened, but when you think about it, it's hysterical. They're just two people who deserve the absolute most success in Charleston. And, you know, everybody in Charleston knows that the younger generation, you know, the up-and-comers, the young to middle 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds and above, you know, Charleston is the place for you to kind of make a name for yourself. Christian, you're a prime example. You have the Holy City Center. It's just, you know, great reviews. Everybody is referring to it. You have the Orange Spot Girls, and me, I'm trying to niche my way in here with a radio show. Which is not common in Charleston. You know, if you go to New York City, you go to L.A., or you go to Vegas, everybody has a radio show. I think the largest thing that's in Charleston, that as far as, like, radio goes, is 95SX, which is, you know, it's a great radio station in its own right. But I think that people need to know the ins and outs of Charleston. They need to know what's going on, when's going on, who I need to see, where I need to go, who I need to hang out with. They need the ins and outs. And I don't think that there's anything out there that has that. And if they do, they don't have the off-the-cuff collar like Christian and I do. So hopefully I'm making my own niche in Charleston. You know, and I was looking at our numbers earlier today, and it's amazing. We have fans in Japan. We have fans in Australia. We have fans all over Europe. We have fans definitely in Charleston. I think 32% of our audience is from Charleston. So we really are kind of tapping, you know, global, and I think that's amazing. But what really kind of warms my heart is that the majority of the listeners are from someplace that I know that Christian and I love very much. We love living here. So there's that. I do want to mention really, really quick. I'm sorry. I had the chance and I had the privilege of meeting one of my culinary idols. It was Sunday, and I found out that Simon Majumdar, who is on the Food Network, you may know him as one of the judges from The Next Iron Chef. He's on Iron Chef all the time. He does a lot of judging competitions on the Food Network. He's currently written two books. He's in Charleston. He's in Charleston for the last couple of days, actually doing what's called a Fed White and Blue Tour, which is where he goes around the entire country to different areas of the United States, eating different places, meeting different people as he goes on this journey of becoming an American citizen. He's originally from England. He has English-Irish background. He's very well known. He was a huge food blogger that decided, you know, enough's enough, and, you know, I'm kind of done with food blogging. But it was just the way that he was able to describe food that the Food Network really kind of picked him up. He has two books that are out right now, and I'm going to post them on our chat room. But if you guys have the chance, go to Amazon, look for him. His books are amazing. He came to Charleston on Sunday, having dinner at one of the biggest places in Charleston. He actually had a cocktail over from Crady's. And Christian, you can talk about from Crady's a little bit more. But it's one of those, you know, upscale restaurants. And then he went to Husk, who has a world famous chef. So it,
yeah, actually,
we were
chef is from the Crady's.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, he started at the Crady's. Sean Brock, who a lot of people outside of Charleston know at this point, he's been on No Reservations with Anthony Bourdain. Anthony Bourdain has had him on some, like, spin-off shows as well. He's been on a lot. But, yeah, Chef Sean Brock, famous chef who was at McCready's and now at Husk, which just opened in Nashville as well. But now, that makes sense. Those are two of the most famous restaurants in Charleston because of Brock, and that would make sense if Simon was going to both. But, yes, continue. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I appreciate that. So if you're going to go to Husk, they're located on 76th Green Street in Charleston. It's a 4.5-star rated restaurant. The food is amazing. You've got great food. You can call them 843-577-2500. Great place to go to. They won James Beard Awards and everything. Great place. But Simon sent me he and I have been Twitter friends for a while. And he sent me a message. He was like, hey, I'm in the Charleston area. I'd love to buy you a drink if you're interested tomorrow. I was like, hell yes, I'm interested. So we went, we're going to go with a local food blogger named, his real name's Charles, but on Twitter he goes by @foodmansing, @FOOD Mansing, MANCING. He's a really, really awesome guy to follow. Has great food, great stories, really nice guy. But he apparently came down with some kind of tooth issue and was unable to make it. So I'm like freaking out. I'm like, oh my God, I need somebody to go with me. I'm meeting this huge, huge food blogger, somebody that I've looked up to for many, many years. I need somebody else to go with me. So I asked Matt, and, you know, we made it happen. But he is the nicest guy ever. I know it took a long time to get there, but he's like really the nicest guy ever. He's so down to earth, so laid back, so relaxed. We met at a place called the Belmont, which is on Upper King Street.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a really, really cute place. It's small. It's a small little place. It reminds me a little bit of Squeeze, just with seating behind the bar. And Squeeze is a restaurant that recently burned down from this mysterious fire, regardless. He came in like, jeans and casual dress shoes. And, like, this, you know, halfway short sleeve button-up black shirt. And he was just, like, the nicest guy. He was really laid back. You know, he was just a lot of fun. He was telling us a lot of stories and a lot of things going on with the Food Network and how he came to be, you know, one of the biggest judges and one of the most revered judges and feared judges on the Food Network. And how, you know, just how his part kind of evolved from just this food blogger back in like the late 90s, 97, 98, when the internet was just essentially being created, if you will, having this small blog just talking about food, just to becoming this huge world-renowned culinary expert and, you know, popping out two best-selling books. But, you know, when you sit down and you talk to him, he had some kind of martini. And, you know, as the night went on, he was really just kind of relaxing. And he was like, you know, it's really good to just kind of be around the area, you know, to be around different people. And this is why, you know, he was saying this is why he does the Fed White and Blue. This is why he's doing this. to go to different places and meet different people and just kind of get their experience of what it is to be a citizen in these areas. I think right now he's in Alabama, if I'm not mistaken. But he's going to this Chiefs thing in Wisconsin. It's like these small little things that nobody would ever expect this high-end culinary expert to go to. And he came to Charleston because he was told by a very good friend of him, Michael Simon, that he has to go to Huff. He has to go to McCready's. He has to see what Sean Brock can do with food. He was like, you know what? I haven't been here in like 20 years. I'm going to go. And we really had a good time. We went to the Belmont, and then we went to the cocktail club, Christian. We went to the cocktail club.
Ah, fantastic.
And, you know, we had a couple of drinks, and he's like, you know what, I'm really hungry. I was like, well, yeah, what do you want? Oh, my God, what do you want? We could bring you to this place and this place. You know, we're naming, like, Four Diamond restaurants. And he's like, you know what? I really just want a burger. I really just want a cheeseburger. And it was at that point, I was like, you know what? He's just a really, really cool guy. Just a really cool guy. So, long story short, I met somebody who I truly admire, somebody who I truly look up to, and he really just turned out to be a great guy. I hope that I can meet him again when he comes back to Charleston. And I wish Christian would have been. Why didn't you come?
Yeah, I know. That would have been fantastic. I don't know his work as well as you do, but it still would have been great to meet him. And that's a great story because, it's a celebrity on whatever level it is and someone that you particularly look up to. So it had to be a great experience for you. And, you know, I like the end where if I'm out with these people, you know, if I was out with a person who works for the Food Network or whatever, and, you know, we're going to these different places and they said they were hungry, I'd be like, oh, God, I got to suggest, like, one of these fancy-schmancy places. All right, who's got the best food? But it's just funny that he's like, I just want a cheeseburger, you know, just so that they're not always out there going to eat at the best restaurants. It's not what it's always about. Sometimes you just want something simple, some comfort food. Not that you can't get a fantastic cheeseburger in Charleston, because Husk has one that is on a bunch of lists, just one burger off the top of my head. But,
right.
For sure, a great story, and that's really, I'm happy for you that you have to go meet him. It must have been quite the thrill, and it sounds like it was.
It was really cool. You know, he was talking about, I had an issue with Bobby Flay. I was like, you know, Bobby Flay is apparently like the godfather of the Food Network. Everybody loves
right.
Bobby Flay. Bobby Flay does no wrong, blah, 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 Bobby Flay. But he's, you know, the way that he kind of broke it down, it's like, yeah, he's the godfather, but he's a really, really good cook. He's really good at what he does. And, of course, he's Irish, so, I mean, his temper goes as far as his nose, and that's about it. So it's really cool to hear, you know, some of the stories about, you know, some of my culinary idols and some of the people who I really have not been a fan of, that he was able to kind of shine some light on them in a different way and allowed me to appreciate kind of what they do in their craft. That's on the other side of the television that, you know, that we don't see. But, you know, it was really cool. He was like, you know, I've spent $2,000 a plate on food. I really just want a burger. I really just want to go out and have a burger. I put my little hat on. He had like a little like golfer hat or whatever. And he was like, I just put my hat on and we'll just go for a burger. And it was just really, we went to, hang on, Matt, what place did we go to for a burger? What place did we go to for a burger with Simon? Hang on, thank you.
I'm interested to see where you ended up around the King Street area, but I didn't want to go to the
right,
Belmont.
Yeah, it was right on King Street. It was a small little place, and apparently every place in Charleston on a Monday shut down by like 6:30. It was Midtown Bar and Grill.
Oh, Midtown. Sure,
Midtown
yeah,
Bar and Grill.
Yeah, they have.
I've never been
there.
Food.
I've eaten there. I've been a few times. They have some good brunch food for sure. I don't think I've ever had like dinner or lunch there. But yeah, Midtown at night it can get a little douchey in there. It's a college bar. After a certain time, it can get, especially on the weekends, it gets a little crowded. And yeah, so just keep that in mind for those. Unless the douche scene is your scene, which hey, for some people it is. I would get there early. Before they start charging a cover or anything, But just know that the crowd will steadily get worse as the night goes on. I hate to say it, it's a good place, but that's kind of the way Midtown works. But no, the food is definitely good there. I've had brunch there, something called a hangover bowl, which is just a bunch of stuff, you know, mixed in like eggs and, you know, hash brown, all that kind of stuff, and it was really, really good. But anyway, great. That was a great story, and glad you got to meet him. It's too bad Charles didn't get to go with you, because he knows his stuff when it comes to food, and he's always got some good stories about Charleston. And
he does. I felt so bad for him.
Yeah,
hey, guys.
It's interesting to hear his side as well.
Hey, Toku,
hey,
guys. You made it.
Oh, Toku, what's going on, man?
Oh, I've been busy and having a lot of stuff going on. It's been a pretty rough couple of weeks, you guys. I'm sorry I wasn't on last week.
It's okay.
It's all good,
you're
man.
You're late tonight, so that's kind of the strike one for you.
Hey,
no.
You can't blame me. I was actually not at home, and my phone died.
Unlikely story.
You want to look at my battery logs? I can pull them up and send you a picture of them.
I'm really okay. Well, I'm glad to have you back. We missed you.
I'm here, and I'm glad to be back, and I'm back to being my normal Rube Baker self, everyone. So, you know, those that know me well enough know, you know me. I'm a rule breaker by heart, and I always will be.
That's right. I do want to tone the conversation down just a little bit. I want to send out our No Rules thoughts and prayers to Corey Monteith, who passed away earlier this week. Apparently the autopsy came back and, you know, he died from, you know, substance abuse, which he was fighting for a long time. He apparently got, he sought help, which was great, but the bad thing about seeking help is that, you know, you're off of your poison, if you will. And, you know, it kind of leads into one of my big topics, and it's something that really just kind of came up fairly recently. I was talking to Matthew about it the other day. You know, Corey Monteith is just one of many. You know, I'm going to back up. I want to send my thoughts and prayers to Corey Monteith's family, to his girlfriend, Leah Michelle, to the entire Glee cast. Those of you who don't know Corey, he was one of the major stars on the hit Fox TV show Glee. He was a great character. He had a great voice. He had so much talent, and it's really sad to see him go. So I hope that his family and his friends and his colleagues and his girlfriend find some peace and solace in what happened. Leah Michelle, who is just who I absolutely love. I love her so much. I think she's brilliant. She's got a killer voice. She's absolutely beautiful. So I hope I send my love and positive vibes out there for everybody who's affected by Corey Monteith.
And
the tragedy.
I personally may not be a big fan of Glee. In fact, I don't find it to be entertaining at all to me. That's just my opinion. But it's really sad when someone actually does die of something like that. So I do also give condolences, even though, quite honestly, I'm not a big fan of the show. It's still pretty messed up.
Yeah, it's a shitty thing. It's a shitty thing. And, you know, it kind of leads into one of my big hot topics here. I'm going to sound like a negative person. I'm going to sound like a bitch. I'm going to sound like somebody who supports drugs. But here's my thing. Thank you. People have thought that was actually a really very inappropriate time for that sound. Anyway, for people who have thought,
hey, I didn't. I'm not guilty.
When they seek help and they get help, you know, they get what's on the proverbial bandwagon or whatever. When they get on the bandwagon, you know, they're sober, they're clean, they don't have any drugs in their system or alcohol or whatever it was that they were abusing. I find that people who have sought help and
are in recovery, when they get back to using, it's usually that one hit that they need to have after they've been on this road to recovery ends up killing them. So it makes me think, and I'm going to say it, doesn't make sense for anybody who is seeking recovery from any kind of, either whether it's alcohol or drugs or what have you, I mean, does it make sense to even seek help? I mean, because if you're going to seek help, then you need to understand that that's it. There's no small hit. There's no one more time. There's no second chances. Everybody who has done drugs, who has gone on recovery, who has done it again, has ended up dead.
That's kind of the problem. Like, I'm absolutely no expert in the field, but my girlfriend, she majored in psychology. She took a lot of classes when it comes to obviously the mind, the brain, how it works, and she took some classes involving people and drugs and addictions and how the brain functions under those stimulants and what happens. So I've learned a lot through her. She's unfortunately had a lot of people in her life, friends, acquaintances from her high school, who are or were drug addicts, many of which have died. Some have gotten help, some have not, some have relapsed. But the biggest thing that I've learned from her, and I had no idea, plus we watch a lot of those, like, the shows that show people, you know, like The Intervention and all that kind of stuff, people trying to recover. It's not always the next time that they do it. You know, it does happen where they go out and they just have a huge bender because they haven't had one in a while. And, yeah, they die. But a lot of times it's they go to recovery, they're clean for a little while, and they slip up. But it's, you know, a slip up over a little bit more time. But the percentage of people who end up using again is pretty large after rehab. Like, it's not a very good percentage of people who stay clean and sober for the rest of their lives. People sometimes have to go back multiple times. It's just, there isn't a perfect solution when someone's afflicted with that disease. It's not as simple as that. You know, it seems frustrating for people who aren't addicts to be like, this is it. You're going to rehab. It's over. It's done. You cannot do this anymore. But, it, you know, from what I do know about it, it's not a simple switch that you can make. And unfortunately, sometimes people relapse.
I want to back up just for a quick second. I'm sorry, Chuck, I didn't mean to interrupt. I am in no way condoning any kind of substance abuse. I'm not condoning that you don't seek help. If you need help and you don't know who to call, you can dial, I think it's *211, and they will absolutely help you with whatever you need, whether it's substance abuse, whether it's suicide, you know, anything. They will absolutely help you. So I'm a firm believer in *211. And I'm not condoning it in any form or fashion. But what I'm saying is that, you know, here's somebody who's gone through help, and then, you know, it was probably his first time doing it again. And, you know, I don't know. This is all allegedly, by the way. I don't know.
Right.
But it just seems like people who have done it in the past and who stopped it for a while, when they do it again, it doesn't seem like it's a good thing for anybody involved. You know?
Oh, of course not.
So that's kind of where I was going with it. I don't want to sound like somebody who's, you know, just do drugs. You know, don't seek help. That's not what I'm saying at all.
I
just wanted to be clarified for legal reasons. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'll say this right now. People need to be more specific on exactly what they define a drug as, okay? Now, for me personally, a drug is more cocaine, meth, heroin, you know, that kind of stuff. To me,
alcohol,
can be, but
prescription pills,
it's
out there.
Yeah, I agree with those, but there's one that people call a drug all the time, and it always irritates me because, yeah, it does have a euphoric effect. Yeah, it does change your body chemistry. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not really all that bad, you know? And that would be weed.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm going to stop you there. A drug is a drug is a drug. If you're going to do drugs, it is a drug. It is something that alters your body chemistry. Whether it's not that bad, quote unquote, or it completely fucks you up and you don't even know your name 5 minutes afterwards, it's still a drug and it's still an issue. So the past it, I find in the next 3 to 5 years, it's going to become illegal again. It's a drug. It's a drug.
I don't know
I'm not disagreeing with what you're
saying. It's a different level type of drug. That's all. It's just a different level.
It's like, okay, there's individuals that I know of that use weed, right? They don't use anything else. They never will use anything else. It's the max that they want, you know? And these people, when they use weed, chill, calm, really cool people, really collected people, really awesome people, you know? They're really awesome without the weed. But, you know, it makes them, you know, more chill, okay? Now, here's my question for you, Topher.
Go ahead.
Okay. Would you rather have someone on the road who was on methamphetamine, or would you rather have someone on the road that was on weed?
You know what? I'm gonna give you a long answer. I deal with people who have eye issues all the time, and I tell you, there are patients who walk out of my office that I'm really, really close to saying, "You call me when you're home, and then I'll get on the road because you're dangerous behind a steering wheel because you can't see shit." Honestly, so
well,
you're tripping on acid, whether you've eaten 1,000 mushrooms, or the fact that your best corrective vision is 26, you know better. I don't want to have anything to do with you on the road. Get the hell off the road. Sorry,
okay.
I don't discriminate. If you can't drive, you can't drive. Fuck off the road. I'm not leaving with that.
I respect you. I respect what you're saying. Okay? I really do. But here's my thing. I've never, ever, 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 ever heard of anyone who's on weed causing a 15-car pileup. You know?
Sure.
Same way with... Okay, you've never heard of it. It hasn't happened, pure and simple. To me, now, this is my opinion, and this is not necessarily the opinion of Uncensored Radio, AMC Press, or anything of that sort. So just to get that out of the way, I have to do the disclaimer. Okay? In my opinion, I would much rather have someone who's a bit stoned on the road, bit on weed, than someone who's just got out of the bar.
No, I understand where you're going with the conversation. I agree. You know, if I had to pick my poison of other people on the road, there are certain drugs, whether it be any drug, honestly, like Advil, okay, that's a drug. They change your body in some way, shape, or form. There's just different levels of potency, and I would definitely not prefer that someone's high as a kite driving on the road, but in comparison to other things, of course. And in putting another perspective, if you had a family member who was an addict, if you had to have someone or a good friend, what would you prefer them be addicted to? What would you prefer them be addicted to cigarettes or weed or alcohol or drugs? Just based on history and the different compositions of these things, we know that alcohol and, you know, nicotine are going to kill people a hell of a lot faster, more devastatingly than weed will, if at all, because there really hasn't been that many studies done showing long-term effects of marijuana. So, I think that's where Toku was going.
I'm not condoning the use of any drug.
Right.
I'm going to say that straight up. I know people that use weed that are really calm and really cool and really collected and really awesome people. But I do not, I'm not going to say, and I'm sorry for picking on someone from the chat room. Oh, Jen Mulholland, maybe we should go smoke a doobie. You know, I'm not going to do that. But what I'm saying is, you know, for the people that I know, it doesn't bother them. It doesn't make them any less desirable to be around. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I hear you. It's completely different than when you're around a bunch of drunks. It's absolutely completely different. I agree with you.
Yeah.
If you're sober, drunk people are terrible to be around most of the time. Like, I mean, like, really drunk. You know, a beer in or something, it's usually not an issue. But, yeah, drunk people are terrible to be around when you're sober. And I've been around friends who are high all the time or a lot of the time, and they're more similar to their regular selves than friends that I've seen on other drugs, including alcohol. So I get that. I completely get it. But I get Topher's point,
you know,
too, and I think it's an interesting question.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with Topher, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing at all. I'm just saying, you know, in my personal experience, people who are potheads are a lot less problematic than those who are, say, meth addicts.
I agree. Absolutely.
Sure.
But
okay.
Anyway, I'm sorry for
taking up so much time, but I just wanted to ask that because, honestly, it's an interesting question.
Absolutely. No, it's absolutely fine. It's really okay. I don't know. I'm of the belief that if it's a drug, it's a drug, it's a drug. You know, regardless of what
that's
it
fine.
Is.
And I
you don't want anybody behind the wheel. You don't want these people to make any kind of major decisions. I mean, hell, I mean, when I've had a couple of drinks, I don't even want to pay my damn bills, let alone anything else. You know, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it in the privacy of my own home. You know, I have a couple of drinks. You know, if I got to, it doesn't matter. It really, it does not matter. I'm just saying, like, in the case of people who have passed away from drug-related issues, I don't know. It's definitely a thought-provoking question. You know, these people definitely need help. They definitely need to get through this. It's definitely a hard thing to get through. But I find that there are people who get through it, and they can get through it well. And, you know, they're on the other end of it. And, you know, they're when you're in recovery, you're in recovery forever. But
right.
when they slip, if you will. When they slip, if you will. It just seems to just kind of end bad. And I just think that's really bad.
I think it's really awful that's
an issue.
A more interesting take on that might be, you know, Topher, you were like, oh, is it worth getting help? Well, I'm sure there's people who got help and it worked for that would say absolutely, and their families would agree. But what we talked about is there's such a low percentage that after that first trip to rehab that actually don't ever use again because the disease is that strong, their desire to use whatever it is so strong. You know, not necessarily is it worth it to get help because this is what we have, but is this the most viable option? What about it works? What about it doesn't? You know what I mean? When something has such a low success rate, it's worth evaluating and saying, hey, maybe there's something else we could be doing. It's hard. I would imagine addiction stuff is still relatively new in comparison to other, you know, sciences and studies of the brain and things like that. So there's still a lot to learn. And I think addiction places have picked up a lot in recent years because of so many celebrities doing it and it being more high profile because of them is what I should say. Then
right.
Maybe the science behind it and the psychotherapy part of it's getting better. But, yeah, the percentage is low. So, you know, is it truly the best route? I think that's a good question. Not necessarily should people seek out help, but is this the best? Is there something that could be done better? You know, is there something out there?
Right. And I honestly think the answer is I don't think anybody really knows. I think
oh, of course not.
Health
no.
is different for everybody. You know, my husband's addiction counselor and mental health therapist. Christian, your girlfriend has a master's degree in psychology. We both know people who are in this field who kind of understand that probably better than anybody else can. And I honestly think that their answer is probably a little bit better than mine. But honestly, I think that health is different for every person. Whatever,
that's the same.
Whoever it is, whatever the situation is, I think it's different for everybody. You can't like Lindsay Lohan. And I haven't brought her up in a long time, so I don't want to hear any bitching and complaining. I haven't brought up Lindsay Lohan in a long time. And
no,
I still dig
example.
The girl. I still wish her well. I wished her a happy birthday. I hope she's doing well. I hope she gets the recovery that she needs. But here's somebody who's gone to, I don't know how many stints in rehab, I don't know how many stints in jail, and it's just not working for her. There's something else out there that can help this girl. It may not be rehab. It may not be, you know, Crossroads, drug treatment center. It may not be jail. I don't know what it is. God, I have no idea what it is. It might just be a really strong
I know what
don't
would
know.
Work for her.
Hey,
I know
I like her, so any negative things,
I'm not going to be too mean.
Okay.
No, it's actually meant to be comedy.
Okay.
Let's tie her down and put what she uses in front of her, that way she can't touch it. That way, you know, she's tempted, but she's forced to look at it and see it and not be able to make contact.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, something like that.
Would you feel that way if somebody did that to you and put a big bowl of ice cream in front of you? No, you'd be pissed. Regardless of what it is,
But I think he makes a good point of, I mean, that's because when you were saying that, Topher, like, I don't know what this girl needs, that was pretty much my thought, too, is that you have to want help, too. She's being forced into it, which I know a lot of addicts are, but it doesn't seem she's actually recognizing. If you don't want help, you're not going to get it. And so, unfortunately, with someone like her, something extreme would really be the only thing that's going to do it. And I think that's the case with a lot of addicts. It's just, if they're alive and walking around, they're going to find it somehow. I mean, the only way you can keep it away would be something extreme. I get the point, and I don't think it was too mean, Toko. You're fine. No one's actually going to do that to her.
Like I said, I'm saying it to be comedy.
Yeah.
But in a sense, it's serious. You know, if we could get something done to stop her from actually going after the drug, you know, maybe she'd learn.
And, you know, so
right.
for, I know we're getting down to the last 12 minutes or so. I knew there was another topic that I don't know if it's related or not, but it kind of is, I think. But you had mentioned, hey, this is something I want to talk about, one of our what-if scenarios about stuff going on with your family. Is it related to that, or if it's not directly related, I still feel like it's a good topic.
So I found this to be a really good topic. It was a topic that kind of hit later on in the evening. It just kind of popped into my head. I feel that, and we don't have a lot of time at all. So, I mean, make your comments a little rapido here. When you think of family, you think of, you know, camaraderie, think of togetherness. You definitely think of, you know, sibling bickery and sibling rivalry and stuff like that. But what happens... And what would you do if there were, and I use the word treachery, what would happen if you felt a little bit betrayed by a family, whether it was your parents, whether it was brother and sister, whether it was a cousin, what have you, somebody in your family that you're close to, if you felt like there was a little betrayal, and then it sparked into a there's no conversation at all. You know, whether it was the fault of you or the fault of the other person, when do you feel like it's acceptable for you to reconcile, and when do you feel like it's acceptable for you to say, you know what, you betrayed me, you hurt me, you made me feel awful. I don't know what brought this on, and I'm not going to stand for it, and you just become done.
That's tough. That's tough because, you know, thankfully my immediate family has, you know, for the most part, they've gotten their stuff. They have their stuff together. Any issues I've had with my parents or my brother have been very minuscule. Normal, I would imagine normal things people go through as they grow older and as you live with people for years and years. So for me, I've been lucky with that. However, outside the immediate family, there's been family members who don't have their stuff together to varying degrees. Thankfully, no one has really betrayed me in a really significant way. So it's hard for me to really answer for sure. But how I've dealt with the outside family, you know, the cousins or aunts or uncles, you know, the people who aren't in that my immediate family, when they're out,
right.
You know, like I've got some, you know, some drug, I don't know if he's an addict or what, but I've got a guy in the family who has a big problem with drugs and drinking, and I've had other people in the family with drinking problems. I've pretty much just ignored them. Like, you know, they're not going out of their way to talk to me anyway, so it didn't make it hard. They're just like, okay, they're related by blood, but they're not really worth my time and investment. And I've been okay with that. It sucks. I wish in some of those instances things were better, but, you know, I didn't need them, so I kind of ignored it. But if somebody in my immediate family, just because things have gone so well, it would be shocking to me, and I would probably bring it up and be like, wow, this is so out of character. So I would bring it up. But to be completely done with someone in my immediate family, it would have to be a pretty huge betrayal. You know, because there isn't any history of problems there. It's not like little build up, this happened, things got better. So for me, it would take something pretty gigantic. But outside my family, my immediate family, it doesn't take much for me to write somebody off and be like, I'm not interested in your time or anything anymore.
Right.
But I know it's kind of a boring answer because I don't have like a real specific story, but I mean, that's just how it is.
I personally have family members that I have, for lack of a better term, I've shut out. I don't consider them family. I don't speak to them. They're when I say I have brothers and sisters, they're not included. Am I shallow? Am I wrong? No. No.
Probably not.
I don't consider them part of the family because they've made that decision by their actions. They made that decision by what they've said. They've made their decision. They've made their bed, so they're lying in it. They're not a part of my family. I don't consider them my brother. I truly don't. I really, and, you know, I'll have my brothers and sisters yell at me, oh, they're your family, you know, blood is thicker than whatever. It's bullshit.
Yeah, I don't buy into that either. Not all the time, anyway.
If you're going to insult me, if you're going to insult my family, if you're going to insult my mother, and you're a part of this family, fuck you. I'm sorry.
I agree.
Absolutely not. There's no rebounding from that. It's almost tyranny. You know what I mean? This is your family. This is your pack. This is your unit. So for you to go and betray your family like that, I think it's a lot of bullshit. So I have nothing to do with you at all. I have nothing to do with you. I have a brother that I literally do not associate myself with. When people talk about him, I do not engage in the conversation. I don't bring up his name. He is not a part of my family. He is nobody that I have anything to do with at all. And I think that's okay. I feel it's acceptable for somebody to have that feeling. But if you're close with a family member and, you know, shit happens, I think that shit happens in every family. I think at that point it's a matter of whether or not you feel it's important for you to make that judgment of whether or not this is something you want to pursue or no. This is something that, you know, I'm honestly done with. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take over the conversation. But that's really kind of
how
I feel.
Good.
I'm in
you're
the situation.
Good. You're good, man.
I understand how this other person is feeling. I think it's bullshit. I think if you want to hate a family member, you can absolutely hate any family member you want, regardless of who it is. I think you have every right to hate them, provided that you have a reasonable excuse.
Well, for me, Topher, if I may,
sure.
There's actually one person in my family I don't care about. If he were to come to my house tomorrow, I'd probably break his kneecap on the site because he's a piece of shit, you know? He's a drunken idiot. And honestly, he's the reason that my cousin committed suicide. And to me... Yeah, I'm not even joking. He is the reason that his own daughter committed suicide. Okay, so I don't want to see him. If I ever see him on the streets, I will have whoever is driving the car pull over, and that man will get a monkey stomp because you killed your own fucking daughter. You are directly responsible for killing your own daughter. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I think that right there would definitely be completely understandable for someone to abandon a member of their own family without a doubt. I mean, that's not even a question. It'd be silly
to
argue that. And Topher, without knowing the details, and, you know, that's fine, it's none of our business, but just judging by what you did say, I think that's okay, too. If you were looking for, like, some kind of confirmation from everybody else, I agree with you. I know that people and families will do that whole, you know, it's family, it's blood, it's thicker than water, you got to stick by them, and they might be giving you some crap because you're not there with your hand out trying to help this person, but I have no problem with that. People who, you know, it'd be a different story if this family member of either of yours did something one time that wasn't very drastic, was still a betrayal, but wasn't, it was the first time they've ever done it. I think that's a different story, depending on how dramatic it is. But something like those two situations are things that are built up over time, and they needle away at you. And, yeah, there's going to be a point where you say this is enough, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think you both are completely justified in feeling that way.
Well, if basically what he did is such an abomination, I don't even want to mention it on air, but put it this way, my entire family on that side is of the same belief that I am. If he comes to a family event, he's getting his ass kicked. If he's seen on the streets by any of the family, done deal. We don't care. We've disowned him 110%. He's no longer an Olmstead, which is my mom's side of the family. He is no longer a member of the family. He is about as good as a bacteria, to be honest.
But see, it sounds like in your scenario, everyone's on board. So you're not running into that whole, you know, confliction of some family members are like, oh, let's forgive and move on. Where it sounds like Topher, it sounds like some people in your family are more like, no, you know, he hasn't made the best decisions. It seems like he's done some pretty bad things, but some members in your family are willing to forgive and they're trying to get you too. Is that what's going on?
Yeah. It's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
But, you know, regardless. Yeah. All right, you guys, we're down to our last 2 minutes or so. I'm sorry, everybody, this turned into a really dark episode. I really didn't mean for it to. You know what? This is why it's called No Rules, just mics. It's whatever happens on the microphone happens on the microphone. We drop it like it's hot, like a son of a bitch, okay? I want to thank Christian.
Yeah.
As always, my host who keeps me sane, my host who keeps me level. I want to thank Toku. I'm so great to have you back on the air, buddy. We missed you last week. I want to thank our fans. I want to thank our audience. I want to thank our Charlestonians who listen to our show every day. I want to thank everybody who's been a part of the show. I want to segue a little bit into a little bit of an update. Nelson Mandela, who is a huge icon of mine, I've looked up to the guy for many, 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 many years. Since I was young, I looked up to him. Nelson Mandela was a former president in Africa, and, you know, he's had a lot of health problems right now, and it was a big issue. We weren't too sure whether or not he was going to make it. He was on life support. He was in critical condition for a long time, but they're actually saying that he's going to go home. So with that, I want to end the episode with probably my favorite Nelson Mandela quote. It is, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us most. And with that, everybody, I hope that everybody has a great, great weekend. I hope everybody enjoys themselves. We have your favorite guilty pleasure coming up in the next couple of seconds. But everybody, have a great evening. Christian, thank you so much. Toki, thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
Problem.
Have a good night.
Have a great
night,
everybody.
Jeff.
Karen, Kat, are you ready for this one?
Recuperating from my long ass day. Of course, yesterday I was so busy from like 6 in the morning until like forever. Like I worked all day, did a whole bunch of stuff. Then I, you know, did the radio show. And the radio show yesterday, I have to tell you, if you didn't listen, you gotta listen. It was hilarious. Katrina Johnson brought a whole lot. She has a beauty top 10 list about aphrodisiacs. And I think we agreed with everything. Like I've come to the conclusion.
We're just a bunch of freaks. I need a better topic next time.
Like we are half man and half woman, all of us, because we all were like, "Yep, yep." That turned me on.
Yep.
Okay.
And then after that, I hosted a music industry showcase, which hopefully one day, James, you'll be in LA and you can hopefully participate in, and. It was like I didn't go to bed, and I think I've had 4 or 5 hours of sleep. So here I am, and I've been running all day, and I'm on like 8 cups of coffee.
Mhm. You can do
it. That's too much caffeine.
You need a vacation.
I know. I'm taking some vacations in August.
I found a vacation that you can go on.
What?
Well, okay. Next week I'm going to Nolens for a few days, and I am going to go crocodile hunting. That's
okay.
Right. I'm gonna strap on.
That's not a case to me.
Well, I mean, I'm weird, so I like to do weird shit, and so my friends are like, "We want to go to New Orleans." I'm like, okay, well, I've already been, but, I mean, I'm sure there's stuff that I haven't done yet. So I started doing some research, and I found, like, they have all this weird stuff you can do, like crocodile hunting. So I bought a crocodile hunting outfit. Like, I got a long sleeve, like, button-down shirt and some, like, green army pants and some crocodile hunting boots and a hat with a net. Like, I'm good to go.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm excited about it, too. They also have this weird tour thing that's called the Bloody Mary Tour. And this woman is named Bloody Mary, and she takes you to all of the grave sites of all the people, and it's at, like, midnight. And then she does, like, voodoo and shit. It's weird.
Oh, no.
And you get a voodoo doll as your, like, souvenir. So I think that we should do an uncensored road trip and go do some weird vacation.
No, thank you.
But
I'm down.
Well,
I'm not
also
doing scary stuff.
Okay, well, we don't have to do that. I found some really cool ones. Like there's a $1 million vacation in Abu Dhabi. There's a vacation with real mermaids in Florida. There's a naked vacation. I think we'd all be good with that. There's a vacation where you can swim with pigs. Or, the best one that I found is a vacation in a little people-themed park. You can take a vacation in a theme park full of midgets.
Shut
up.
I'm not joking. I am not joking. I swear. It's actually the fastest growing it's the fastest growing theme park in the world. So far 77.6 million visitors have gone there. It's in China and it opened in 2009 and it's called the Dwarf Empire. And it's in southern China, and I'm mad that when I went to China, I didn't know about this because I would have gone. So and they employ only little people. So, like, I want to see how big the buildings are because the janitors, the performers, everybody is a little person. And so I think that we need to pack up Chelsea Lately, grab Chewy, and we're going.
Let me see Chewy. Oh my gosh, I didn't hurt at all.
I don't understand. Like, so are the, like, so if a regular person goes, are the stalls, like, am I going to have to, like, get on my knees to piss?
I don't know. I want to know. I'm imagining that they cater to both.
I think I'm going to fit in too much. I don't know if I want to go to this one either. I'm a little short.
Yeah, you're little.
You both are.
Right. They might mistake us for a little person, or we might just find find some homies.
Well, they're all, they're dressed up and they look like toddlers. They're in little, in one of the pictures, they're in little, like, leotards with tutus.
That seems offensive
and
to me.
They're
I think
tiny.
So too. I think so, too. That seems so offensive. But I guess
well, they look.
It,
I don't think it's offensive because they're employing hundreds of thousands of little people. I think that's actually a good thing.
Right,
no,
right.
I agree.
I agree.
Aren't the people in like China kind of smaller anyway? So
yeah. So these little people are real, real little people.
Yeah.
Coach.
Yeah. No,
but
they are
I'm
definitely. They are definitely smaller. Like, that's kind of the, like, it's crazy because they're, everything, they're genetically, they're just, like, thinner, they're smaller, everything.
I couldn't buy clothes in China. I was so much wider in every way than all of the other people there. Like, I went to the Chinese Hooters, and it was hilarious because I was the only person there with Hooters. Their uniforms were like what we would wear here as like child size.
So would it be like somebody making you order a bridesmaid's dress from China and it fucking with everybody's head?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know who
like
would do
that.
Such a thing, but
someone
yeah.
is rude.
I'm thinking if that happened, it would have been somebody's mama who picked out the dress and didn't pay attention that the bitch was coming from China.
Well, I knew the bitch was coming from China. I called that from a mile away, and I tried to warn you, but it was too late. People had already ordered. I ordered the proper size because, well, I know what Chinese sizes could do to a person's psyche, so I just ordered a size 4 instead of a size 2, and I was good to go.
If I remember correctly, we had to use vice grips and...
If I remember correctly, she ordered a size 2.
I had to cellophane myself into it also. But the point is, I got into it, and I would have never gotten into it at all if I had ordered the 2, which is what I usually do.
See, now, if you do one of these magic rats with us, you won't have this problem.
Yes.
Let's do the magic wrap and then stick me back in your bridesmaid's dress. Oh, Dawn, I left it at your house. Shucks.
Don't worry. I'll send that over when I send you the wraps.
Damn it. And I'll send you a ticket to, what is this place even called? What's the translation? Dwarf Empire. I'll send you a ticket to the Dwarf Empire.
So wait, is it for midgets or is it for dwarfs? I mean, because it's kind of two different things.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
No. It's called Dwarf Empire.
I don't think people like to be called midgets. I think they like to be called either dwarfs or they like to be called little people.
No,
yeah,
I'm telling you, somebody Google that shit. I'm telling you right now, there's a difference between a dwarf and a midget.
No, there is.
No,
there
it's
is.
Not.
Yeah, I think it's just
semantics, people. I think it's the same thing. I'm Googling.
Right, and I think you're right, and I think it might be they like to be called, you know, dwarfish, not lip-sided.
Right.
They don't like that word.
It's like more rude sounding to me than a midget. Like, they got their shit backwards.
Jeffrey, you're backwards. You like to be, you don't care if anyone ever calls you a fag. So, you can't say anything about backwards.
How can I get pissed off if somebody calls me a bundle of sticks? Like, okay, that just means I'm thin, so keep it coming.
You can't judge, though. That's like, they,
I'm not judging. I love midgets with their little stumpy hands and shit. I think it's fantastic.
Oh, my God.
I would like to get one.
Do not send the letters to Uncensored Radio. Send them to Jeffrey Emmett. I'm just kidding. All to Jeffrey.
I love little people. If you can't take a joke, you're probably not tall enough to listen to the show. Oh, ba-dum-bum.
Oh. That was rude.
That's how I roll.
Rude Ruff. That's how he rolls. Rude Ruff.
Sure is.
Mm.
This is not new.
But
kids.
I love him. I love him. I love him, Rude Ruff, actually.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of that, I don't know why. But
oh,
you know, last night you were
supposed
to do something for me.
Hmm.
Did you deliver my message that I want my hair did and my toes done?
No, I forgot.
You really just disappoint me sometimes.
Sorry. I was working.
I've located some information, folks.
Ooh. Oh, dear,
okay,
here we go.
Okay.
Jeffrey was right.
I usually
there
am.
Is a difference between
oh,
midgets
Lord,
and dwarfs. Jesus. This is because you had a midget in your possession. That's the only reason you know. I bet you looked it up, and that's why, because you have
no.
the angry midget. And that's actually the proper
potato.
Term. Okay, well, apparently, the difference between dwarfs and midgets are that dwarfism is a medical condition, and there are over 200 forms of medical dwarfs that stem from genetic mutations. And there are different physical attributes, which are low muscle tone, overcrowded teeth, and shorter limbs when compared to proportionally to their bodies. Whereas midgets are just exceptionally short people that have no other physical or genetic abnormalities.
Yeah, like
so
that.
So the angry midget is an angry midget because she's just mad because she's short. But a dwarf. Actually, there are 200 different kinds, and it's a medical condition, and their limbs are disproportionate.
So, can they get SSI?
I don't know what's SSI.
You know, like, because if it's a medical condition, I'm just wondering, is it considered, like, do they have, like, they've got to, you know, if it's a medical issue, they've got to be, like, predisposed to some kind of, you know, probably a lot of problems.
Yeah.
You know, medically speaking. So I wonder if they're even able to really, I mean, well, I guess they did in The Lord of the Rings, but I mean, like, I don't know, like,
no, they
you know.
Are. Like, you know what show I really, really love? Like, I have grown to just, like, the Little Couple, and it's such a great show because they're just living their life, and, like, they're two hugely successful people. Like, they did not let, what?
Are they the ones with the kids? They have the TLC show?
They just got kids. Yeah, they just, like, literally adopted a baby. But this is what's great about this show, because they haven't stopped their lives. Like, this has not held them back whatsoever. Like, the husband is a successful businessman. Like, he owns a lot of businesses. The wife is, like, a pediatrics doctor. Like, she's ridiculously smart. They live in Houston. They have this amazing, like, they built this amazing home, custom made for them. And the last, like, two or three seasons, they basically have been trying to have a kid. Like, they went through IVF, they went through the old El Natural, they went, and so, like, it was like, she's so little, like, she's tiny, she's like 3'2", but extremely tiny. And they were like, your body can't hold it, like, it's very dangerous,
Like, it was just impossible. And so she tried and tried, and then they told her, you definitely can't get pregnant because, like, a lot of little people have, they have problems with their lungs or they have problems with their heart. And so she found out that she has, like, heart condition. And so she couldn't get pregnant. So then they went to, you know, trying to have a baby with a, you know, with a
surrogate,
yeah. And then finally, that failed, like, twice. And so then they finally decided, okay, we're going to just adopt a child. And they just found a little boy. And they adopted a little boy who's a little person as well. And they adopted a little boy in China, and they're adopting a little girl in India. And so, I mean, if you see, where these kids came from. Well, they joined this one company, and it's like, you know, they specialize in, you know, helping you find children abroad or helping you find children. You know, and especially they specifically wanted a child like that because they felt like, you know, people aren't going to go, you know, adopt a little person. They're going to go adopt a healthy baby, you know. And so they wanted to be sure to, you know.
Oh, now you're
like,
just going
to
piss people off. Little
life.
People are healthy. They're just little.
No, I'm just saying, like, they're not going to, like, if you go and adopt a baby, you're not going to sit there and go, I want to adopt a little baby. Like, it's very rare that someone's going to go and say, I want to adopt a special needs child. Most people, mm-hmm. when they go to adopt, they're going to adopt all the you know, the ones that are kind of, quote-unquote, you know, there's a lot of kids that fall through the cracks, so. And special needs children are one of them, so.
I think it would be a riot. Like, if I ever found a little person baby that needed a home, I would take that baby. Because, you know, that little baby would seem like it was a little baby forever. Like, it would be great.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy because this little guy that they adopted, I saw this a couple of scenes, like, he's almost as tall as the mom. And because she's tiny. But he's a baby. Like, he's totally a three-year-old, like, little baby. Like, he acts like a three-year-old. But she's so small. But it's such a great show. Like, it gave me all new perspective on just how amazing, like, what they have to overcome. Because a lot of times, I mean, just walking around, if you go to an amusement park, that's hard to do. If you think of the smaller step, or, you know, it's just physically that they can't go and ride a horse, or, you know, it's just physically there are things they can't do. It's very difficult.
They can ride one of the baby horses.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it is? Sometimes they're too wide, so it's like, you know, but you're right, they could potentially ride one of those little ones. So, yeah, but it's an amazing show if you ever get the time to watch it. Okay, back to our crazy talk.
Which, I don't even know what it was anymore.
Right.
I was talking about Strange Vacation.
Oh, I don't know, the whole little people. I just love it, though. I'm sorry. It just reminds me of those conjoined twins.
You would definitely do that just so you could ask them strange, inappropriate questions.
Mm-hmm.
You would adopt them.
Fuck you, because when we talked about it on air, I was like, when we originally talked about it, you weren't there. And I was like, where's Katrina? Because she'd agree with me. And when you came back on, you were like, yeah. So, the hell with you.
I'm just saying, yeah, that's true, but I wouldn't adopt them. I wouldn't subject anybody to adopting them.
I'm not trying to adopt conjoined twins either. Like, I don't know. That's a lot. But I'm saying I've got
questions. There you go. Especially children. They don't get adopted.
Well, I don't have insurance. If I had insurance, it'd be a little different situation.
No, you know when you adopt a kid, they have insurance. They're insured for the rest of their life.
Or until
they're a certain age. But yeah, it's nothing else. A girlfriend of mine adopted a baby, and it was a very complicated situation. It was actually, you know, her sister had problems, and it was bad. It was one of those situations where either I adopt this baby, or this baby's going to go into foster care, and we're going to lose her. Like, it's just, you know, you never know what's going to happen, right? Yeah. So literally, her daughter is, like, 13. Her son is, like, a grown man, and here she is with a newborn, and it turned her whole life around. But she said the one thing that they do give you when you adopt a baby, she said, this is what she told me. She goes, if you're a foster parent, they give you money, they pay you this, it's all good. But once you adopt the kid, now you're financially responsible. You don't get that, like, foster care money or anything. Like, it literally drops to, like, very little. But one thing they do give you is they give the kid health care.
that kid can go to the top-notch hospitals. Like, they have, like, some of the best health care.
Well, that's amazing. Thank goodness for that.
That's great. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think about it. Like, I'm like, people don't have health care or don't have insurance. Like, you really get, you know, because I've had it and I've not had it. You really get subpar, you know, like, you get, because when you go to the doctor, treatment, exactly, I couldn't think of the word, subpar treatment when you don't have insurance. When you have insurance, you literally, like, I have insurance right now, and literally, I can just call any doctor in L.A., and I can just go see them, like, any specialist.
Yeah.
No restriction. It's crazy. It's awful that that's how it's set up.
Oh, see, I don't even care about that. I'm sitting here like, you know, when I went, when I got sick after we went to that convention, I was I went to the clinic, which is supposed to be, like, cheaper, you know, which they spent all of 3 minutes with me and then told me I needed to go to the ER. Went to the ER, was in the ER for over 2 hours. The doctor came in, was in the room for a total of 5 minutes, and the bill for the two places together was over, like, almost $500. I'm, like, literally for 10 minutes of somebody's time, I spent $500, and the guy didn't, he didn't even read the report. Like, I had to tell him what was wrong, because he's like, oh, you probably just have the flu, go home. And I'm like, oh, no, dude, I've got this other problem. See here?
Wow.
Wow.
That's
terrible. That's the thing. Subpar treatment. And I'm telling you, if you had insurance, you would have been catered to. They give you tests that they don't need to give because they can charge it off to the insurance.
I mean,
like, they
just insurance, and, like, the hospital in particular in this town is just wretched. Like, you know, it's just bad
really?
Business. Yeah, like, I don't really particularly care to go there because people go in and die. You know, they go in with a pain in their foot. They die. So I try to avoid
that
hospital. But the thing that kills me is, though, you know, so I was like, all right, well, I can't afford to, like, pay all that at once. I mean, I could, but I'm not going to. Like, you know, I got shit I want to do. So I was like, can I get on a payment plan, which was quick and easy. And the payment plan was less than what it would cost me for insurance. I'm like, well, maybe this isn't so bad.
Well, I think because of what you're, like, the type of insurance that, because you're self-employed and, you know, it's
any.
A little different. Right, I'm just saying, but if you were to buy into insurance at this point, the type of insurance and the options that you have are very expensive because it's kind of like
horrible.
You.
Well, they have Healthy
you
New
know?
York, okay, which I was on when I first met Joe. I bought myself some insurance, and it was, like, $230 a month, which I still was like, that's a car payment. You know, and then, of course, there was, like, the $20 copays every time I went to the doctor and the copay for the prescription. But, like, the one day I go to the doctor, and then they send me to go get x-rays, and I had to pay two different copays, okay, which kind of just flipped me out, you know. So, I mean, the copays ended up being a couple hundred extra dollars on top of the $230.
But see, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, you are all alone. So you're, but see, like, me, the insurance I'm in, I'm part of a big group. So the copay is, what, $30, you know, and then you go to the doctor and you get some, like, some of the medication, like, the stuff I put on my dermatologist gives me literally is, like, $280 a tube. And then I go and pay $30 or $40, I think. So it, for me, it worked, but see, I'm part of a big network where you're kind of, it's like you all alone. But I think that's what they're trying to do with healthcare so that it's more like all the unemployed people kind of buy in together and you all have the same thing so that it's not going to be, like you said, a couple hundred dollars just to go get an x-ray and get, like, it's like,
well,
ridiculous.
Well, it just seems to be getting worse because I went to go try to get back on Healthy New York, you know, because technically... Now, even people on welfare, if you're overweight, you can go get gastric bypass. So at one point, like, I was like, maybe I just need to do it and, you know, get done with this. So I called back to get the same insurance that I had before, which is now $390 a month. There's no insurance coverage, no prescription coverage at all. And you have to pay a $1,500 deductible before they cover anything.
Ouchie.
So I'm like, I don't even use, that's like, we're talking by the time, whatever we added up the payments, it was like $5,000 a year. I'm like, I don't, even if I went to the doctor all I want, I'm still not going to rack up $5,000. So
right.
you know, houses make payments arrangements and do it that way, because it's just not worth it. That's crazy money. I'm not, no, kiss my ass. You are not getting my money for nothing. No, it's
that's
like car
horrible.
Insurance.
Yeah. Well, you have to have car insurance. Like, they said at
no,
some point,
it's robbery. I'm paying you every month so that when I do get in an accident, you're there. So now I've paid you for 10 years, X amount of money, got into an accident, you had to pay maybe $2,000, which isn't even, you know, and a fourth of what I've paid into you, and then you're going to triple my rates. It's bullshit. It's really highway robbery.
Well, I'm not saying that it's simple, but I will say this. Anytime I've ever gotten into an accident, if I can just make a phone call and 2 weeks later, it's all, like, I get a rental car, and then everything's all fixed, and then it's all good. Like, yeah, you know, I mean, I actually don't want to deal with the hassle of, you know, dealing with a you know, mechanic and deal with this.
Well, no, I don't
it
either.
It makes my life easier.
No, I'm not saying that it doesn't make life. It's not. I'm not saying that it's not convenient, but I'm saying.
Well,
when
it
you
is
really
because
take
I've
it
only
down,
crashed 10 cars, and every time they give me money for a new one. So I'm on
end of that.
I'm not safe, and I'm not good, and it's good for me.
Yeah, you are a scary driver. Like, you really do scare the shit out of me.
It's not good.
Oh my God! I've never driven with her, so I'm
don't
interested
do it.
In finding out. I'm gonna do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
You get air sickness. You're afraid of heights. You're gonna have all that come into play. Don't do it. You won't like it.
If anybody's trying to go into labor, go for a ride with Katrina.
Yeah, I'll push you there. Definitely.
That baby will pop out like quick, like.
Mm-hmm. It'll be good.
That is crazy. Yeah, see, I need to plan a trip to Vegas, and I've been trying to figure it out, and it's looking like Katrina Johnson that I might be coming to Vegas in September.
Oh, hell yes.
I thought she was going to say hell no.
No, my girl's going to welcome me with open arms, no matter what.
Hi. Please do. It's about time.
Yeah, I know. Like, honestly, any other time, I'd be in Vegas all the time. But for whatever reason, now that I have a true diehard homie in Vegas, I just can't figure out how to get there.
Yeah, like, why is it the kid that's on the opposite end of the country has been to her house more than you?
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. I know. I'm a horrible person.
You really are.
A bad friend.
But Katrina, don't try to go stay at her house, though, because you know she don't have that shit.
Oh, shut it up. Always gotta bring this up. Always gotta bring something up.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's how
mm-hmm.
That's how you know I love you.
Mm-hmm. Such a pot stirrer, this one.
Uh-huh.
But you are a good friend because I've received a Hello Kitty in the mail that I love.
Ooh.
What?
Oh, yeah, first.
I got a present.
Yes, she did. It was just a little token. Just a little
and
token.
I love
I saw
it, though.
And I was like, oh, my God, it's Katrina Johnson. And I, like, ran the person down to find out where they got it.
Oh.
Well, I love it. I received from Ms. Ashley a ginormous Hello Kitty phone case, and it's the cutest thing I've ever seen.
Kiss ass.
I had to kill somebody. What?
Kiss ass? Well, I'll tell you what. If you give me a Hello Kitty anything, like maybe a Hello Kitty Build-A-Bear, I will kiss your ass as well. On air.
I got you Baby Emmett. There's only one of those in the world. I think that's kind of the best gift ever.
Well, did I not kiss your ass for that on air? Yes, it was a kiss.
No, but you got me some wine glasses that cost more than my mortgage. So that was thank you.
All right, well, good. So, see, there you go.
Did I ever tell you? Like, that's a little traumatic. Like, for those who don't know, when Christina, yeah, mm-hmm, that's it. Katrina came to the wedding. She got me these wine glasses, right? And I was like, they were gorgeous, you know? So I figured they were expensive, but I'm thinking $50 a piece. Or, you know, for the set or whatever. I almost passed out because I was like, well, I want to get, you know, a full set. Like, I wanted to get some more of them. So I went on to go order them, and I was like, I'm sorry, what? Like, that's what? That's for two? So needless to say, them bitches are back in the box. use them. Because I'm like, if they break them, you know, that's more than what most people pay for rent a month. Like, it's not going down like that. So, thank you. Thank you for spoiling me that much and loving me that much and not even ever telling me so I found out on my own and almost passed out.
No, you're welcome. Well, you know, I figure weddings are sacred. Even though I don't want to have one, I still support my loved ones who do. And to you, wine is sacred, so it just seemed to make sense.
Right.
Yes. I appreciate it. I sat there for like 2 hours just looking at the computer screen, not sure what to do.
Now, who does that? Who does that? Who gets a gift that goes online and figures out how much it costs?
I wasn't trying to figure out how much it costs. Like, I wanted to order more because it's wine glasses, and they're beautiful.
You know you were trying to figure it out.
If I was doing that, I would have done it forever.
You would have done it months ago, though.
Yeah, like, I just did it because I've been, like, going through my wine glasses and getting through, like, you know, just getting rid of the crappy ones or the ones we don't use or whatever. And I was like, I want more of these. Like, I wanted to kind of fill up my hatch with those because those are the prettiest ones, and I like nice wine glasses.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was, like, trying to buy them.
And then you were like, whoop, there it is. Never mind.
Yeah. Well, and then I even checked eBay to see if I could get them for cheaper on eBay.
Oh, no. They'll sell for more.
Yeah. I was like, oh, dear. I'm going to have to wait for a sale.
Right.
Well, the good thing is if you ever break them, they will replace them. Swarovski will replace them. Yeah, just keep the broken parts. It's like when you buy a Louis Vuitton bag, if it breaks, they'll give you a new one. Yeah, same idea.
I don't have to have the receipt or anything?
No, you just send in the broken pieces and they send it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Then I guess I'm taking the bitches back out the box.
Yeah, those places, they're great. They'll fix your shit because they know you just spent a ton of money doing it.
Well, that makes sense because, I mean, that was kind of crazy to me because I'm like, you know, unless you're uber rich, like, I'm not even using that wine glass because if I break it, I'm going to fucking hate myself. Like, I'm going to have to go into therapy and shit.
You know, they're actually really made of, like, some really tough stuff. Like, It would take a lot to break it. It's not going to be like a normal. Like, they kind of come up with the system. I mean, it's not unbreakable. But
no, they're not unbreakable. They're not no Alicia Keys glasses. I've broken a few and I cried every time.
Yeah. They're definitely, yeah.
Like, I'm crazy when it comes to stuff like that. Like, I was that kid that always bought, like, shit and never took it out of the package because I didn't want it to get ruined.
Right.
Are you like the 40-year-old virgin?
No, but like I would buy like stuff to do. You know, I wanted to be all artsy, so I'd buy all this like arts and crafts shit. Like, and then I would never take it out of the package because I didn't want it to get ruined or dry out. So I would always saved it for a day that I was going to use the whole thing at once. And those days never came, and I don't even know whatever happened to all that shit.
Oh.
Or, like, boxes for anything. Like, I have the boxes for every electronics in this house, in the basement, in pristine shape.
Why do you have boxes like that? Like, that to me, you know, boxes attract bugs. So, you need to get rid of those boxes.
Well, because, like, the TV, like, what happens if it breaks? Like, I'm afraid I need the box.
Hoarder.
Wow.
Come on, hoarder.
I keep my TV boxes and my computer boxes. I keep my boxes to my expensive stuff.
Well,
I mean, more though for in case I move.
Well, and that's the other thing. Like, I knew we were going to move, so I kept the boxes, and then there's, you know, the Keurig boxes down there, a microwave box. Like, it's, I don't know.
So tell me something, this Keurig, everybody keeps talking about it. You can pretty much buy any kind of coffee to go in the Keurig, right?
They have this thing now that you get this little thing and it plops in, it's like $5. It plops in and then you can just scoop your own brand coffee in there.
Oh.
So you can truly, yeah, like I'm telling you, like I was just telling somebody the other day that, you know, Joyce and Jeff were coming over here every night. And we thought it was to see the dog. It wasn't even to see Izzy, because they haven't been over here since we got them a Keurig. Like,
right.
They came over every night. They would walk through. They wouldn't even really acknowledge us. They'd go straight to the Keurig. And since we got them their own, we ain't seen them.
That's funny.
That's
not
funny.
Kidding. I mean, they haven't been over here in probably almost 2 weeks.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? I think that's good because, you know, they got what they love, you know, and that's a beautiful thing. You guys got them a great gift, obviously. They are enjoying the hell out of it, obviously. You know?
Right.
Are you sad because you haven't seen them?
Well, no, I just think it's funny. Don't ever tell me that I'm a user and I only come around in the summer when the pool's open. Like, I got it from somewhere.
Oh, God, that's hilarious. That is too hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it is what it is, right?
Mm-hmm. She's shiesty.
That's funny.
So, wait, are you telling me, Miss Karen Ashley, that you don't have a Keurig?
I don't know. I'm like making a pot of coffee in the morning. You know?
Like, do you actually drink the whole pot?
No. I'll have one cup.
See, you
it's
need a Keurig. Okay.
Cup.
So,
it's
Katrina.
Yes.
For her birthday, we need to get her a Keurig.
That's expensive.
Okay,
you do not
that.
Need to give me a Keurig.
You no,
you
can get the
that.
Single
no.
cup ones. Like for they're like you can get them for under $100.
Oh, okay. Because the one I saw was like super expensive, and I was like, "What the hell? Why are people buying this?"
But
you know
I don't even
I'm
love
like,
my
mm-hmm.
parents that much. I think I got there.
Okay.
I went to Bed Bath & Beyond, or no, I went to Kohl's because I had the 30% off of use your Kohl's card,
mm-hmm.
and it ended up being like $120, and it was a big one.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. Yeah. Don't love me that much. Trust me. I don't
Don't worry,
that.
I don't.
Don't love me that much.
Yeah, you do.
No. Yeah, he does. He's such a liar. He can't
when
get
you send me
you.
Crazy expensive wine glasses, I love you that much. I'm just...
Oh, okay.
Just
yeah.
No, you pay me. No, you pay me.
San Tam weren't good enough.
Actually, you actually really sent a gift that keeps on giving. And Joe has been telling me to ask you, and I keep forgetting, to
what?
Send more of the jerk sauce because
oh.
it is his most favorite thing in the world. And we cannot get that brand up here. And he's like,
I'll,
no, I'm not trying nothing else. He's like, I want that brand. I'm like, Joe, are you kidding?
I'll order two bottles tomorrow. I've got to get you guys also the, what is it? Okay, so we do jerk. And then there's, oh, my gosh, I can't even think. What is it called? What is it called, the other chicken? No, the other one.
I don't know. Teriyaki? What can you
is
do with chicken?
She's
got
to be talking
know.
To my husband-in-law.
Yeah, I'm talking to the husband-in-law. You know the other one we do. It's not the one we put potatoes and carrots in it sometimes. Curry. I've got to send you the curry sauce. You
Ooh.
Will flip your lid and die and go to heaven. It's amazing. And look, the husband-in-law was like, I want some curry.
Tell him I want my hair
now,
done.
Just said, you know, since you had your show last night, he goes, he wants to keep the wife-in-law. He wants to, you to, you know, get his hair done, and he's a pedicure. It's smiling out of the room. He really forgot to smile out of him.
That's it. That's all you get, Jeffrey. You got
to
smile.
Like,
out of
I it. Did not sign up to get a gay wife-in-law.
Right.
Like, nowhere
right.
in this
no.
kind of trick.
I did not sign up to get a gay wife-in-law. He's like, who came up with that?
Actually, that would be you.
Yeah, I did, actually. He knows how I am. He just rolls with me. He has no other choice. Yeah.
What else? Yeah, exactly. What else could he possibly do?
Exactly. It's just what it is. It is what it is. Yeah.
So, okay. Since we're on this whole gift thing, you know, and different kind of things, let's talk about what's your favorite gadget? That you bought. Like, you know, everybody I feel like has that one thing that you either see in an infomercial or, you know, that you'll see at a fair or somewhere. You see this
My Roomba.
Thing you, what the hell is a Roomba?
What?
It's that vacuum, but it's like a robot and it vacuums on its own and it you just let it go and you can program it to certain rooms and
oh,
it's got
God,
a sensor.
I need that.
It's sick. I love it the most. My Roomba.
Does it really
I don't know, like sharper images, like a vacuum cleaner. I don't know how much they are now. When they first came out, they were like $400, $500. Kind of like the same amount as a Dyson, except it does it on its own.
Yeah,
and I love
it.
It's
the
coolest thing ever.
Work?
Yeah, and it does all kinds of floors. Like, part of my house is hardwood, part of it is tile, part of it's carpet, and it does all surfaces.
I need that.
And it's got a remote, so it's cool because you can just program it to do what you want. You can set it up on a timer. It's got sensors, so it can sense which room you want it to do.
Can it go from, like, a hardwood floor to a rug and not get stuck?
Yeah.
And what about furniture? How does it get under furniture?
Underneath, it'll go if it can fit, but it's got to be, like a foot wide.
Yeah, it's got to be able to get under there, yeah.
Really? That's kind of fancy.
It's cool. I love it. It's like a toy, but it's got a real good function.
Right.
That, and I would like a robot.
Well, I mean, everybody would like one.
I know, but they have them. Like, do you ever read the Sharper Image catalogs or, like, the in-flight catalogs? They have real robots. They have, like, an R2-D2, and it talks to you, and it'll go get you stuff. I want one. I don't want a child that I can program to go get me stuff because that's too much responsibility. But a robot.
Yeah, we'll talk back eventually.
Yeah, but that's okay. In the meantime, it would be cool. It would be like my friend.
It would be like my friend. That's kind of sad. Are you lonely these days?
Well, because I watched a movie where that happened recently. My dad and I are watching this movie on the pay-per-view.
I almost felt bad for her. I almost felt like she didn't have any friends. She almost dued me for one
day. Well, but they did that in this movie. There was this old, lonely old man, and he started to, like, get dementia, and he refused to admit that he wanted help. And so what they did is they got him this robot, and this robot was his friend, but also, like, cooked for him and cleaned for him, and it was pretty sick, and I want one.
I'd be afraid it'd kill me in my sleep, though, because there's just been too many movies that it just goes bad.
Well, it did go bad, because he trained the robot to rob a house.
Oh, see?
But you know what it is? It's always people. We always ruin the moment. Like, somebody always ruins the moment.
But, I mean, that happens across the board because I think we as a society are just so fucking greedy that people, nothing is ever enough. And, like, they just, it's horrible. Like, if robots ever go, if they ever get robots, you know, for defenses, we're screwed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they do. They already have them. They already have
them. I mean, if they get them to where they're replacing soldiers, like, to where we don't need any period, like, we're done.
Well, Iron Man, they're preparing us for the future.
This bitch. Okay. If they create an Iron Man 2. Oh, Lord.
Go see Iron Man 3.
I already did. I saw it before you.
I finally saw it, and I loved it.
I did too. I love me some, what's
Robert
his name?
Downey Jr.
Robert Downey could get it.
Oh,
like,
I have
been all day in the morning.
I've been like him for a while.
I love him.
Ask
so
not
cool.
What your country can do for you, but what I could do for Robert Downey Jr. Oh.
Why is he like such a sex symbol? Like, he's about to be 50, but he's so funny. He's so handsome.
He's
so
in good shape. He's on top of his game, and he's the man.
He's got that rugged sexiness to him, and, like, everybody knows he was a bad boy, and he's kind of reformed. And come on, every bitch, all of us, I think everybody at one point in their life wanted a bad boy, especially one that kind of turned his life around and came back on top. You know, like, he's the underdog, and I think people just love that no matter what.
Mm-hmm. And you know,
I love to be under... Wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You, like,
him.
Want to be under what? That sounds good. What?
Him.
Under him? I expect to be under him. Just like that. Oh, gosh.
I was mid-sentence, and then somebody walked in on my conversation.
I
wasn't supposed to hear that comment.
That'd be me. Oh, man. No, this is what I was trying to say. All these bitches that are cracking up and, like, the Lindsays and the Amandas, y'all have no excuse. Like, look at Robert Downey Jr. He is one of the highest paid actors. He cleaned up his life. Get your shit together. Like, oh my gosh.
Well, even though even Charlie Sheen has got bounced back and got a new show and it's doing fine.
Yeah, but it's not the same because he's really not cleaned up his life. Like, he's still partying. He's still a fucking slob. Like, it's different, I feel. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
but
I mean,
still has a career is what I'm saying.
Right. If he actually cleaned up his act and his, like, personal life, where I think in the public's eye, whether Robert Downey Jr. has or not, is, I don't know. But I think that that's what most people believe, is that he has cleaned up his personal life as well. Whereas Charlie Sheen is just a fucking slob. Like, ooh. Like, and there's just nothing cute about him anymore. He drank too much.
Oh, there's procedures for that.
Like, I feel like his nose, I feel like his nose got bigger. Does anybody else feel that way?
You know, it probably did. He probably built a crater in there.
No, he's lost so much weight. Charlie is so thin. Like, you know, that's when people lose a lot of weight, their head gets bigger. Like, their head doesn't
shrink.
Yeah,
all the top head.
Yeah, and it's like he looks like Betty Boop, and now his nose and his facial features are much larger because he's so thin.
Yeah, like his nostrils, which, I mean, makes sense with doing as much blow as he has. But it's just so different. You know what I mean? You look at him from when he first started that show, he was still good-looking.
Mm-hmm.
But the last,
right,
like, 5 years or so, it's like, oh, yeah.
Well,
like, you ain't even
cute. Has a point. He probably had some stuff done to correct the things that he's done, and it's not
right.
Insane. Like, as good a plastic surgeon is, it's still not going to be like your normal self. Like, the good ones keep you as close to normal as possible, you know?
Yeah, he's just looking beat. But I don't know. I remember when Robert Downey, when he was on Ally McBeal, and he got fired.
Oh, yeah.
Because of all the drugs, you know?
Smoking crack they caught him smoking crack in an alleyway.
Right, but the sad thing is, like, and again, it was the Charlie Sheen thing. Like, he was great on that show. He was one of the most popular characters. Like,
oh,
and, you know, the
so
fact
good.
That they got him was just awesome. And then, you know, once he left the show, like, that was just kind of it for it. It went downhill real quick.
Yeah. It was so wonderful. Like, it was so, so wonderful. Like, my heart was broken when that whole thing happened, and I remember just going, man, I hope this guy gets it together, because he was so freaking talented, and the chemistry they had together, and it was funny, and it was clever, and it was well-written. Oh, it hurt my feelings.
Mm-hmm. Like, that was a great show in its time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's really, mm-hmm. Like, I don't know that. I don't feel like there's a whole lot of them that have done that, like, that are that,
right,
that have become as big as he has. Like, you know, Angelina Jolie went through a lot of crap. But, I mean,
mm-hmm,
he, like, really went through the ringer publicly and came back, and he is more on top than anybody.
He can be on top.
Top, bottom, sideways, crooked,
whatever,
upside down, left, right, front to
right,
back.
Round
to
back.
Stars are nice.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm looking at one of his mugshots, and he still looks good.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? He's never done no wrong. Like, he's one of those people, even when he was messing up, he still would show up with the performance. Like, it was almost shocking that he was going through all that, because we were like, what? But he's so talented. Like, I don't know that I've ever seen him in anything that I was disappointed with what he brought to the movie. Like,
right.
I've never been, or the performance. Like, he's always been on point. Like, amazing actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's true. He really...
Like, I love him.
Fantastic. And he's just one of the greats. Like, he truly is. Like, and you know, there was... What's that one guy? He was in the Brat Pack, and he was on Suddenly Susan there. He was another one that went downhill, and then we never really saw him again. Judd Nelson, maybe? Is that his name? Do you remember him?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
I don't.
Judd Nelson, he was in state. Like, wasn't he in, like... Saying almost fire, and he was,
yeah, and he was
in
the Brat, or he was in the Breakfast Club.
Uh-huh.
He was the bad boy.
He was the one, yeah. He was the bad guy.
Cool. And then he ended up on Suddenly Susan, and then he got fired or let go or whatever happened with that, because he was into some trouble.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I didn't know he got in trouble.
Yeah, I think he had a little drug problem, or he was just crazy, bipolar. It was something, you know.
Right.
Where it just... It was just badness, and he had to leave.
Wow.
Because I think Kathy Griffin even talked about it just briefly in her book, just mentioned it, you know, like he was going through it, the bad time
wow.
of his life.
Well,
you know,
he's
that,
still
that,
doing things.
Some great careers.
But
huh?
he's behind the scenes now.
Yeah, I think he's directing,
his
right?
acting career is kind of done.
Drugs have really messed up some major careers. Like, really messed up some careers. Like, if
or
you think about it, it's like, yeah, like, if you think about, like, the people we've lost because of drugs, like, where they could have been, it's just mind-boggling. Like, doesn't anybody go, I don't want to end up like that? Like, you don't retire as a drug dealer or a drug user. Like, you're not a retired drug user. You either die or you go to jail.
Okay, I'm not sure that's necessarily true, because I'm sure there is a retired drug dealer out there who made enough in his lifetime to retire. I'm positive.
Maybe, but that's probably like one or two people. Most of the most of the people I know, they either dead, they in jail, or they're broke. Because they get so greedy and things just happen. Horrible things always happen to people who make fast money. Like, it's just It comes in quick and it leaves just as quick.
Really true. I mean, look at all the people that have won like crazy amount of money in the lottery, and they end up destitute within a couple of years.
Well, you know what I was watching this weekend? It's so crazy, but they were doing this whole special. You know me and my sports. I like sports. But if you guys ever got into sports, it's honestly, it's like Young and the Restless, but it's real life because it's just as dramatic. But they were saying people in the NFL that they have a 2-year, like, it's like 90% of them, 2-year window that they will be broke. They will be in the NFL and make hundreds of millions of dollars, and they're broke within 2 years of not playing.
Because the spending is so high?
Yes. Yeah, it's crazy. And then they were saying that people in the NBA, because they get paid a little more because it's not as many people on the team, they have a 4-year window. And they were saying how it's so hard. It's hard to become rich, but it's even harder to stay rich.
To stay?
Because you never think the money's going to end. And you never go, okay, we need to cut back.
I know,
okay,
that's right.
Guilty. Last year I had $100 million, and now, you know, I only have $1,000 coming in. Like, you still spend, like Michael Jackson. He kept spending like it was Thriller. Dude, Thriller was like in the 80s. It was never Thriller again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so weird to me. Like, you have that much money at your disposal. There's so many things you can invest in to keep the money coming in. And, like, they just don't. And it just blows my mind. Like, I just can't even comprehend, like, how one could be that stupid.
Mm-hmm. You got to be like the Beats and have brilliant financial planners on your side.
Like, even what's Gary Coleman, you know, the one that died there? Like, you know, he was like, oh, I'm broke. But he, like, whoever his parents or whoever it was, did one smart thing. And they set the kid up with a retirement fund from SAG to where he was still making, like, even though he was saying he was broke, he was making $150,000 a year, which, I mean, you know, to rich people, that is broke. But, you know, to me, like, that's, you know,
well,
that's
no,
a comfortable
SAG
life.
That's where, you know what, though? After that whole Gary Coleman thing, like, in the 80s, they revamped. That's when SAG and all those unions really came into play. Because now, if you're a kid actor, they take a certain percentage. I think it's, I don't know if it's, is it 25%, Katrina? What is it?
I don't know, because mine all disappeared, but.
Right. But this is the thing.
I think
it's
more than that.
It's supposed to be taken out. Yeah, it's supposed to be taken out immediately, and it goes into a trust for you, right? And that's the only thing that really saved Gary Coleman to a certain extent, was because he made millions, millions, millions on top of millions. And his parents, it wasn't set up that way back in the early 80s. And so they squandered all of his money. So all he had left really was what he paid into, you know, retirement or whatever. Because, you know, you always pay into Social Security, you pay into all these things. And because he made so much, you know, he had a little nest egg that he paid into the government that they couldn't touch. His parents squandered millions of
dollars.
Well,
that seems to happen to so many child stars. I mean, you look at, like, Macaulay Culkin, all of them. The only ones that seemed to come out clear was the Olsen twins, really. You know, that still didn't
build
billions.
Well, because their empire was in the billions, you know, that's why.
Well, I just think their parents were smart enough, even though they were horrible parents, apparently, but they were smart enough to market those children and invest in them and, you know, keep it keep that cash cow. You know, they cashed in when they could, which was smart.
Mm-hmm. I'm not mad at them. Because those girls never have to do a damn thing again.
Yeah. No, and they don't.
Well, you know what? Their parents, I will say this, they freaking capitalized on all of it. Because obviously they started doing, they were the first to kind of start doing a clothing line. And kids were flocking to Walmart. And they were smart enough to make it cheap. So they made like $1 billion just doing a clothing line. Like they had clothes, they had shoes, they had belts, they had backpacks,
they had everything.
They had lip gloss. Like they had everything. And now they're actually well respected designers in the design world. And they're on a different level. Like you're not going to really go out and buy a Mary Kate and Ashley. Like it's more in private boutiques and more expensive. But it's like, it was ridiculous. Their parents really set them up, and like they took control of their careers, though. Like, you know, they. That's like a handbook. Like, if you want to follow your life, if you're gonna have your kid and stuff, like you follow whatever the Olsen twins did because it was amazing.
Well, it's true because I mean, honestly, like, yeah, okay, they did a whole bunch of those, you know, the Mary-Kate and Ashley videos or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So, like, your sales and stuff off that's not going to last forever. But they marketed them, and they turned them into a brand, which is just genius.
Right.
Genius.
Right.
We need that. Can we borrow their parents?
That's what me and Karen's trying to do here, bitch. We're trying to make a brand.
Yeah. You got to come to more of the meetings.
Oh, well, about that.
Yeah, see? She going to miss the ship, and then she's going to be like, well, I didn't know.
Yeah, probably.
You know, and I think we shouldn't tell her, like, the first check or whatever when we know we're making money. Let's not tell her, and let's just send her a check.
Right.
That's
fine. Or how about we'll just, see, she's fine with getting a check.
Mm-hmm.
When we'll send
that's
her one
fine.
With
I like
money.
Checks. No, don't do that. That's rude.
Mm-hmm.
What's the matter? You don't like funny money?
No. I like other people's money. I don't like funny money.
I know. I would like some other people's money, too. Could you share? Could tell them to share.
Sure.
Like, I got some things I need.
Me too. We need some things.
I need a motorhome. Which that could
I'm
going to
get you a crocodile.
You do not
Holland.
Need a motorhome. Change your verbiage. You want
so
a
I shouldn't
motorhome.
Tell
you
that I bought one?
It. Oh, God. For what? What are you going to do? I want you to go on a road trip every weekend.
He's going to Odessa to move in with your mom. You know that's the first stop. Don't front like it's not.
Well, I'll meet you there next week. I'll be there next week.
Yeah, don't put that past me. If Joe and I ever break up, I'm going to live with your mama.
Oh, she would take you with open arms. She'd be like, come on, boo. Come on, boo.
And then you'd be like
pissed. I'm living a single life over here. She over there
because
living a single life.
And she'd have a garden.
You'd be calling your mama. And she'd be getting hammered. Yeah, we'd be all fucked up. We'd be going out, and you'd be like, Mom, why every time I talk to you, you sound like you're fucked up? And you'd be like, because
I am.
Can I
get the biker bars? Can I get the biker bars?
She'll be like, Mija, we were dancing late last night.
Mija, how was it going?
I know.
Yeah, no. I'm telling you, Jeff, you and my mom would be two peas in a pod. You
we'd
would
be trouble.
So great. Because you like to clean, you like to talk, you like to party, you like to do things that are different, you like to socialize. Those are all things she likes to do. Like, that's all she wants to do.
Yeah,
like
her and I would be, like, major trouble together. We'd probably get arrested, knock off a liquor store.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
she
would
love Katrina, too. Like, trust me, it would be... You
on and cracking. I want Mama to come to one of the conventions with us and play.
I know. We gotta figure it out.
Oh, that's all she wrote.
That's it.
Of course, just as we're planning to bring Mama out to play with us, then you got to cut us off, see?